In this session, we're going to be talking about turning regular living expenses into appreciating investment. We have already established some of the laws of God regarding financial freedom and successful management. We've established already the law of giving more than is expected and talked about in depth how this has an overwhelming bearing on our financial success. Then we're going to talk about the expenses that are normally incurred in a home, some of them, at least a few of them, to kind of get you started, and how you can turn some of these into appreciating investments. There's just fixed incomes that families have that just day to day have to be met. And we want to talk about how some of these can be turned into appreciating investments. If we can find ways to divert some of our overhead and our expenses into growing investments rather than it just being something we use up today, live up today, or wear out today, and it doesn't have an appreciated value, then we're going to do that. And so we're going to be talking about several areas that you can consider as possibilities to begin to turn your regular living expenses into growing investments. But before we get into that thought entirely, let's talk about three words that I think we'll be using during this particular session, and that some of you may just need to be reminded of what they mean. One word is depreciation. Polly is here in this session with me, and I, as always, of course. And Polly, what do we mean by the word depreciating?
Oh, decreasing in value, or going down in value, or becoming less valuable.
Thank you. And so that's the kind of a thing, Polly, that a person wants to avoid in their regular living expenses, is to avoid purchasing items, goods, products that are depreciating, or, as you said, are losing their values day by day. Then another term that we're going to be talking about, and that's appreciating. Sweetheart, would you tell us what do we mean by appreciating?
Well, it's just the opposite of depreciating. It means increasing in value, going up in value, or becoming more valuable.
All right, thank you. So they're really antonyms. They mean the very opposite one to the other. The other word that we need to identify and give the meaning of is investment. The word means the outlay of money for income or for profit. In this segment of the series, we're going to be talking about various investments that will, in fact, increase our income or will develop profits for the family. An appreciating investment is an investment that makes you money while you're working or playing or whatever you're doing. It's continuing to grow in value. And that's something that every person needs to understand and learn and begin to look for. If we're aware of the fact that some of our regular living expenses can become the appreciating investment versus it just becoming a depreciating item that's going to wear out, become of less value, and not create income or profit, then we want to avoid them. So the purpose of this introduction is to help you become aware of the difference, and also help you become mindful of beginning to look for items that will grow in value, will appreciate rather than depreciate in their values. One of the first areas we'd like to talk about in terms of a regular living expenses is that of life insurance. I feel like that 1 Timothy 5 and 8 really is a strong scripture supporting providing for a family. Notice it says, if you have your Bible, look with me. But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. I don't have any idea that the writer was thinking about life insurance at that time, but I am aware of the fact that he was concerned about the breadwinner providing for his family. Now, this scripture is not just talking about the physical needs of the family. It's an all-inclusive meaning. It means many different things. Their spiritual needs, their domestic needs, their mental needs, their physical needs, their spiritual needs. And so it's included in this particular passage of scripture. So life insurance that a family can purchase, and hopefully at an early age in their life, in order to reduce the cost, and then to have the coverage for the family at all times through their life. I think this is a healthy way for every young married couple to begin their life, is to have the breadwinner insured for enough money, or whatever they can afford at the very beginning of their marriage, to underwrite the future for his mate if he were suddenly taken out of the picture. Years ago, we suggested, of course, a lot of whole life, ordinary, or permanent insurance. Those words are all synonymous. They mean the same thing, basically. They really imply an insurance policy that will have a cash value. And one of those policies, just mentioned, permanent insurance, after you've paid normally the second year premium, it then has a cash value. You could borrow money in case of an emergency. What this really is a more or less a forced plan of savings. I don't necessarily think that Christians ought to be forced to save, but on the other hand, I'm keenly aware, after having counseled thousands of people over the past 32 years, that very few of them do have a savings that they can fall back on in time of an emergency, or when they need to make an investment, or for some special reason that they might need to get a hold of cash. So the permanent insurance policy can provide, in emergency cases, or in any case as far as that goes, can provide some cash readily available for you to do whatever you'd like to. And today, with our high rate of interest that are being charged all over the country, the life insurance company is still only charging about 6%, in some cases less than that. So I think it's an ideal way for a family to go. I would suggest that you not purchase more than about $25,000 of permanent or whole life insurance. Since this insurance is very expensive, and since you actually are earning on the amount of money above the actual money to cover you or to insure you, you're actually only earning about 1.5%. Now, that was not bad 10 years ago. But today, of course, with the earning power of money in CDs, in security notes, in savings and loans, just a passbook account, it far surpasses that. And this is the reason that we would like to suggest that you not go beyond about a $25,000 permanent or whole life insurance policy. The balance of that insurance, we feel like, should be in term. And term insurance is simply what it says. You purchase it for a given term. Then take the rest of the money that would be left in a whole life or ordinary life insurance policy and invest that money into a good investment that will grow faster than it will grow or create value in the whole life or permanent insurance policy. I think that many people are becoming aware today of the fact that too often they have too much of the wrong kind of insurance. I understand from some of the brokers that I'm associated with, that there's a prediction today that within 5 years from now, there will really not be an insurance policy known as a permanent or a whole life or ordinary life insurance policy. Because of the cost of that coverage, people are going more and more to term insurance. Now, in order to purchase insurance, some things should be done that I think we could suggest. And I'd like to ask Polly what steps you should do in order to research the insurance to decide what would be the best purchase for you.
Perry, one of the things that we've stressed in the other sessions is that in anything they do, they must do the research. And
that's
in,
right.
In doing the research for insurance, they need to get all the facts. Don't just take the word of one insurance salesman, even though that salesman might be their closest friend. There isn't a chance that they could find, he might have the best buy.
Right.
But
sure.
They need to do the research, check many insurance companies to see which is the best buy for the amount of money. It isn't always the cheapest insurance that's the best buy. Neither is it the highest insurance that's the best buy. But they need to check out and see which one gives the most coverage for the amount of premium.
Right, and so you're saying then, darling, in fact, that they should prepare a written analysis to compare the rates, the benefits, the cash values at 5, 10, and 20 years intervals in order to know what policy is actually going to provide for them the most for the very least. In other words, you're saying all policies and prices are not the same. I thought for many years, Polly, that that insurance companies were forced to be comparable in their charges, and I'm sure there is a certain amount of that, but I understand that they can literally vary as much as 25% for the same coverage, the same kind of policy that a person might be buying. So we'd like to say, be sure and get the facts, get a written analysis. You make that. It will reveal which policy is the best buy. Compare, talk to several agents. Remember, there are about 1,830 insurance companies, and so there's a lot of insurance offered today, and we must do the research if we're going to come up with the best buy. This will save buying insurance, taking the time to sit down with agents and get physicals and go through all of that, then a year or 2 years later decide that, hey, I did that wrong. I'm gonna look a little further and buy another policy. If the legwork or the homework is done to start out with, then we can avoid a lot of the problems that may later occur to us in regards to that particular policy as to whether it is a good policy and does provide what we want it to provide. So remember, know the merchandise, invest the time and effort to become skilled in value and quality. The second area that we'd like to talk about that we consider to be one of the ideal ways to turn regular living expenses into appreciating investments, and that is a home. Turning the expense of shelter into a highly profitable appreciating investment. By the way, the single family resident, Polly, is the safest investment and best in America today. I wonder why that is. Do you have any idea, Polly? What would you suggest as the reason that might be one of the safest investments?
Well, the first thing I think about is that everyone needs someplace to live, and that would make it a safe investment. They don't always need buildings to rent or other things to that might be considered an investment, but a home is something we all must have. Some place to live, shelter of some form.
Right. So then when they start to buy a home, the same thing we suggested, or you suggested, a few moments ago about the insurance, they literally should study the market. They should do the research and decide what is the best buy. My dad always said that if you buy it right, it's already half sold. In other words, the profit is made on an item really when it's bought. Isn't that right, darling?
Yes,
rather than when it's sold. We often think of the profits being made the day we make the sale, but that's really not true. That's just the day we collect the profits. But the profit is really made the day we make the purchase. If we make it right, we have already built into it, we have already established the fact that it's worth more or worth what we paid for it. Too often people buy in a hurry. Polly, I don't know if we could possibly emphasize enough the importance of taking the time to study the market, do the research, and in the same thing that we talked about before, they need to get a written analysis to compare prices, qualities, terms, in order to establish the very best buy possible. There's a lot of study has to go into the purchase of a home. One of the things that you'll be interested to know, if you don't already understand this, that payments, or at least the principal part of the payment, is like putting money into a savings account, because it really is going into the investment of that particular home. Every month, whether you're just paying that payment and living there, or whether you're renting that home and drawing an income from it, whatever is being applied to the principal is actually money that's literally going right into the savings account, the same thing. One of the things, darling, that we've talked about in several of the sessions over the last few months, I felt like it was real direction from the Lord when He really began to speak to us. So many people are concerned today about buying a home because of the high interest rate. And as you and I prayed and studied and did our own homework and asking the Lord how we could help the people make decisions in purchasing, I felt like the Lord really gave us some instructions, because where people are paying 12, 14, 16% and some higher for homes today, that there's really a way that they can avoid that kind of high interest rates. So let's talk about that for just a few moments. One of the examples I think we've used, Polly, is that we've said if a home, the payment on that home cost about, say, $320 per month, and maybe this is a 30, 35-year amortization schedule, it's going to pay out in 30, 35 years. Probably the $20, we're talking about a $320 a month payment, the $20 probably represents the principal, the all that's applied to the principal, or the liquidation of the mortgage on that particular payment of that particular house. Meaning that the $300 is really interest. So one way that would make it very simple to explain would be if you doubled the principal each month that you paid the payment, you would literally reduce the interest rate by one half, because the principal that you applied to the regular payment, say you made a $320 payment, and you sent an extra $20, which would be doubling the principal that first month, you literally would reduce the payment of that home by half, or you would reduce the interest rate by half. Now, I must explain that since the interest and the principal are constantly changing, the interest will be growing each month and the principal will be reducing each month. You would have to double the principal each month. And that'll grow tremendously over the next few years. So what Polly and I suggest you do is to apply $100 extra to your present payment. That $320 payment we were talking about a moment ago, if you simply applied $100 to the principal above that payment, then you would actually pay the home off in about 10 to 12 years, or about one-third the pay period by increasing your payment just $100 a month. Now, let me say, because some of you already have homes that are already being purchased, you're already paying for it, and you might not be able to go to your SNL, your savings loan, and arrange that kind, or you might not be able to go to the finance corporation that's carrying your papers. Generally speaking, you can. But for those of you who are purchasing new homes, which is the group I really addressed this thought to start out with, you can, before you purchase that home, refuse to sign a prepayment penalty, which means you'd have to pay a penalty for each dollar that you applied to it earlier than it was normally called for in the amortization schedule. So you'd have to talk to the lender in some cases in order to do this. So if you decide to send $100 to the mortgage company, be sure you write a letter, tell them what you're doing, that you want to apply $100 to the principal. Remember now that in that first month, for an example, you would literally be paying five extra payments, thereabout, a few dollars off. But roughly, you'd be paying about 5 months' payments, but you would not be paying any interest at all. So you can understand, those of you who are listening to this tape, that you would be saving an awfully lot of money anytime you did that. Well, since we're talking about paying 5 months' payments, you would be saving $1,500 interest right off the cuff, because you're paying 5 months payments without paying any interest on it. So you're reducing the cost of that home and reducing the interest rate, really reducing the time that you're going to pay that home off. And I think it's a healthy way for you to approach the payment of your home. $100 normally applied to a payment of this size will pay it off in about one-third of the regular pay period. It's interesting to note, Polly, that financing has only become a popular thing since about the 1920s. In fact, previous to 1928, only 2% of the homes built required any kind of a loan. And then, after that time, normally the loans were fairly short-term loans, but 10 years after World War II, 98% of all housing was funded by loans. In that short period of time, we went from 2% being financed to 98% being financed after World War II. The first loans consumed only about 12% of the family income, while in 1978, home loans consumed then about 47% of the family's income. The loans back then were, of course, very short-term loans and low-interest loans. While 1978, they were ranging from 15 to 40 years for loans, and of course that's still being continued today. But one of the things that is being considered by the savings and loans now and other lenders is 100-year loans for financing on the home. Of course, with the price of homes increasing and with the money crunch that our world is experiencing today. They're trying to do everything they can to make home or housing available for people who are struggling in that particular area today. So I think we need to say again, learn quality and value. If you'll do this, it will reduce the purchase price. You'll become more knowledgeable in the area of purchasing a home. I have to say it'll be hard work. You get out and contact a lot of realtors and take the newspaper and visit a lot of people and talk to them about prices, look at the quality of homes, become knowledgeable in it, but it'll also be a lot of fun. And you will become very knowledgeable in the area of purchasing a home. And the better you do your research, the faster you will create a flow of income or cash in that particular investment. And that's going to pay you multiplied returns while you work, play, sleep, travel, go to church, whatever you do, it's going to continue to grow on a regular basis. So let me give you some steps that you actually could take. Polly, maybe you could share some of the steps in this particular area about some things they should do before they purchase the home.
Perry, they should talk to many realtors. Identify appreciating neighborhoods, because there are neighborhoods that the property will continue to appreciate, and there are neighborhoods where it will continue to go down in value. They need to do the research for market trends, styles, floor plans, and essential features necessary for maximum appreciation. So many times we go in and pick out a unique floor plan that appeals to us because of its uniqueness, and then when we get ready to resell it, if we do in the future, no one else wants it because it's so unusual. And so if you're buying a home, you need to look at the possibility that you might want to sell it in the future.
How do young people view that, Polly, when they're buying or building their first home?
Oh, this will be the home we'll have for the rest of our lives. And I think most women feel that way because we're feeling beings. We think every home is going to be the last one. And so we wanted to have just exactly the things that we've always wanted in a home.
That's exactly right. And the family purchasing a home is really going to own about two or three homes, the average, in a lifetime. There are people that live in one home all of their life, but the average throughout the United States is to own about two or three homes in a lifetime. And so that first home that they purchase will not normally be the one. And normally, as we were talking a little bit ago, they're trying to decide what they want in it, but that should not be a real strong factor at all. They should be considering, what does the buying public want in a home? I think one of the factors would be, if you were purchasing a three-bedroom home, you would certainly want that to have two baths. A three-bedroom home with one bath would not be a highly marketable item. It's not that it would not sell, it's that it will not bring the highest dollar for it. It also should have some kind of protection for an automobile, a carport or a garage. This also will add value because people who are wanting a nice three-bedroom home also will want some kind of accommodations for the automobile to be able to park it in out of the weather.
Perry, there's something else that I like to remind people about, is that their home is an investment. It isn't just a home. Even if they buy it to own for the rest of their lives, it's still an investment. And the better they take care of it, the better the maintenance for that home, the more it will continue to appreciate in value. It's like anything else that we invest money in. If the better we take care of it, the more we are protecting our money. And I mean by that, it should be kept painted. The lawn should be kept nice. The shrubs nice. All of this makes the property worth more.
Right. Isn't it neat to know Polly, that in purchasing a home, that the average individual can purchase a home, take care of it, as you have just said, maintain it, and live in it for a lifetime, and probably sell it or trade it and make a profit. That's really neat, isn't it? And that's what we're talking about in this particular segment. We're talking about turning regular living expenses. Now, one of the ways you might evaluate this would be considering the person who owns a home and is paying a payment, who will probably, if he buys it right, it will never cost him anything over the long haul. Now, compare that to the person who rents regularly. Just today, was talking to someone, and they were renting a house, and they're paying almost $400 per month for rent right now. Okay, you can take the rent receipts and save them the rest of your life, and they will purchase absolutely nothing. But on the other hand, that person could be taking that $400 per month, investing it in a home, and it would be growing. It would become an investment rather than an overhead to the family. Take months, if necessary, to research, look at homes, and build a comparable analysis file. Get a city map and locate the homes on the map so that you're being able to identify appreciating neighborhoods that Polly suggested you buy in a little bit ago. And after you have located the homes and their prices and the terms that they can be purchased on and studied quality and value, you're going to become very skilled in value and appreciating quality. You'll recognize, of course, opportunities when you see it. It's interesting to know, Polly, that the more you do this, the more you study it, the more you research it, the more homes you look at, the better qualified you'll become to make a good decision and will make a better decision the longer you look. If you're really studying markets and market trends and styling and of course, the location. One of the things that's extremely important, the most important factor of all, is the location of that house. It must be located in the right area. And it's always interesting to try to purchase a home that may be a little smaller than the neighborhood. This means that you won't have overpurchased. Your house probably be worth more per square foot than the largest house on the block per square foot. So don't overpurchase in those areas or in those neighborhoods. Just think, valuable skills, knowledge, and techniques of market research that you will develop that'll pay you dividends for a lifetime and enable you, of course, to recognize the many great opportunities to create appreciating and income-producing investments.
Harry, there's another way to find or to have a good investment or to make money, like all of us are wanting to do whatever we want to with, and that is if the family has developed do-it-yourself skills. They can find a home that's in need of repair or needs to be remodeled, maybe could add a room or something like this, or poorly arranged, and the family go in and make it a work project and cause it to increase in value by being able to do it yourself.
That's excellent, Polly. That's tremendous advice. So research, get professional advice, and remember the location is the most important factor. Do not make an emotional decision. We have taught so much about this area of emotional spending. Do not make an emotional decision. Be informed before you purchase. Now then, we have talked about making this kind of an investment as a part of turning regular living expenses into appreciating investments. But we also are confronted, many of you, with the locked-in situation. Maybe you already have your home, and maybe you don't feel like they would allow you to apply some cash each month to it. Now, one thing you ought to do is you should, even if your contract states that there's a prepayment penalty clause in there, if you have a low interest rate versus high interest rate today, they more than likely would welcome and nullify that part of the contract that says they would charge you a penalty for prepayment on the principal of that particular mortgage. So you'd be wise to check with them, because they might be very willing today, with interest rates ranging from 12 to 18% on homes, they might be willing readily to allow you to apply chunks of money to that principal to get it paid off. Otherwise, they know they're locked in with a 7, 8, 9% loan for the next 25 or 30 years. So don't give up just because your contract says there's a prepayment penalty clause involved. Now, let me say this in case you are locked in and there's no way you can apply money to the principal and get your home paid off earlier. Let me suggest a way that you, another avenue that you can take to pay it off. One way would be, of course, to establish a savings account in the bank or in the savings loan, and then as that grows in value by the earning of interest and you depositing that $100 or whatever you can per month to shorten the life of your payment or pay period, then apply that out there in the future onto the note of the home. Now, don't get emotional one day and buy a motorboat or something else or a new car or something. Save that money, allocate it for the home, and use it for the home. Don't allow it, because, you know, you put it in something like I just mentioned, and it's going to start depreciating rather than appreciating. And we're talking about saving you money and not taking some of your money and turning it into depreciating investments. So avoid that kind of a decision. So let me make a suggestion of something you might do. I've just learned in the last few months that available right now, you can actually purchase a CD by the month. Polly, we've just shared this in a couple of seminars we've been in recently in West Texas. And you can actually take $100 a month, go to the bank, each bank might vary a little bit, and tell them you'd like to purchase a CD and ask them what size. I think I might be able to tell you what size CD you could purchase. You probably can purchase a $2,600 CD for $100 a month, and it'll pay out in 30 months. You'll own a $2,600 CD in 30 months, paying $100 a month. All it will cost you for borrowing that money, since you're going to borrow the money to purchase the CD with, you're going to start earning interest on that. They're going to charge you interest for the money you've borrowed, so the actual cost will only be 2% for the loan difference in what you earn and what you pay for that particular money. So at the end of 30 months, you own a $2,600 CD already paid for, and it's growing and earning whatever, 12, 14% interest, and that'll go a long ways toward applying that to your home somewhere on down the road. Turn right around, do the same thing again. Purchase another one. Or purchase a $5,200 CD and apply $2,600 to it. You will start making money immediately. You're already in the earning ballpark. You're no longer paying money out. You're earning money now. So this is a real neat way to accumulate a good chunk of money where you cannot apply it to the house payment. You can establish your own savings and apply it at any given point you want to in a large chunk of money. So that's a pretty healthy way to approach it if you're unable to apply small payments or $100 a month added to your already mortgage that you're already making. Let me suggest to you, this really goes beyond regular living expenses, but while we're talking about homes, Polly, let's talk about the possibility of an individual purchasing additional housing or homes for income. Would you say that would be a smart move for the average American today, Polly?
Yes, very, very smart.
Because it really could create a fine income. So an example of that might be that an individual might begin and purchase one home per year, every year, say for the next 10 years. And I think I've heard you say this, Polly, that that it's possible, even today, when housing is extremely scarce in some areas, and also is pretty high in some areas, that it also is still possible to purchase at a very small down payment and sometimes no down payment. Would you like to talk about that, Polly?
Well, it the day we're living in, it sounds almost impossible, and most people, when they're sitting in the seminars and when you make a statement like that, I can almost hear them saying, but I don't have the money to do it, and there's no way that I can. But it goes back to doing the research. If they will do the research, if they will continue to put out the word that they're looking for a home, there'll be someone in the next months that will need to sell the home, does not want to take the time, or does not have the time to leave it on the market because they cannot continue to make the payments while it's being sold. And so they're willing to take little or nothing down just to get out from under the load of that particular payment.
That's extremely important. And sometimes we don't say this, Polly, but I think that it's appropriate to say it right now. We're always assuming that where we're conducting seminars, that the people already are being instructed to pray before they do anything, that they never should make any decision. Too often, people in purchasing a house or a car or anything, they often don't pray until they're in trouble with the situation. And the prayer, would you say, should precede the purchase?
I don't think Christian people should do anything without praying, regardless of what they're going to buy. If it's a dress for a lady or a suit for a man or as much as a house or a car, whatever, I think they should ask the Lord to direct them so that they can find the best buy.
Right, and in so doing, God is able to direct them and bring them in touch with the person who has the house for sale that can be a good buy for them. And it also may alleviate the pressure from another person. So more than one good thing is happening at a time. Remember, get the facts, know the merchandise. There are other expenses, of course, that may become good investments. Just think, if possible, purchase items at a price that will allow you to use them and later sell them and recover the money. And often, you can even make money at that particular time. There's real value of items that often may not cost very much, that we may actually sell them and make a profit. Real value is usually a fraction of the retail selling price, and so often we can make purchases that we can use and enjoy items that we later can sell and not really cost us anything or may even make money. I think there's several items that we might just suggest, Polly. One of those would be recreational equipment, campers, camping equipment, items that people become tired of, and you can buy them now and use them and enjoy them for a few years and sell them and often recover your money, sometimes even make a little money. Hunting equipment, guns. Garage sales offer slightly used and often expensive suits, boots, coats, and equipment for only a fraction of its selling price. certain model guns, of course, that are appreciating today would be excellent investments. And often they're sold in garage sales when they person may not even know the real value. Of course, there are other items, other guns that could be purchased that you could lose money instantly on. And so you need to discover those bargains, take advantage of them whenever you're ready to make those particular purchases. There are also many profitable hobbies that can be developed and can be turned into productive income producing hobbies that really can prove profitable in individuals' life. Working with your hand, of course, always gives self-worth, Polly, and tremendous satisfaction that nothing else can give. I hear people saying regularly, you know, I really would prefer just to be out there with my hands. I think most everybody would prefer to be out there working with their hands, but that's not always the most profitable way, but it certainly is the most enjoyable way to make a living. Of course, there are such things as gardening and sewing that also can turn into be very profitable hobbies and often can be very enjoyable to individuals who like to do these kinds of things.
Perry, there's one thing that we need to reemphasize over and over and over again. You've said it several times during this this particular teaching, and I've said it, but again, they need to do the research. Take the time to get out and do the research in whatever field they're looking for, whether it's a home, whether it's insurance, recreation equipment, whatever it is. They need to take the time to do the research and know quality and value, and to remember the statement that you made about what your dad had said: the profit's made when you buy, not when you sell.
That is so true, Polly, and I was just thinking in closing this segment of a friend of ours, Rudy and Marge Jones, who have been so close to us through the years. I was thinking back when we met them back in the late 50s, I suppose, became closely associated with them and have remained since that time very closely associated with them. I remember that they were part of our church back then, and Rudy was our educational director, and Marge, of course, was involved in our educational department also. And they purchased, they went out and did a lot of research, and they were wanting to buy a piece of property up in Cloudcroft, New Mexico. And they bought a mobile home. I think they might have given around $700 for it. And went up there and did the research and bought a little tract of land. It was about 3 or 5 acres, something like that. Moved that mobile home up there and enjoyed it for about 14 years. All through the years, at various times, intervals, they'd take their family, the three children, and they would go up there and spend a few days in the mountains, enjoying the mountains and the snow and the wintertime and enjoying the beauty of Cloudcroft any time of the year. And I remember you and I, of course, were there when they decided to dispose of that mobile home and do something else, build something larger or buy something that would be bigger for more people to come, because you and I, of course, were visiting there at that time. And never will forget that Rudy and I took that mobile home down, put the tires back on it, been about 14 years, and sold the mobile home for about $1,000 on location after enjoying it with their family, Polly, about 14 years in that home. And you and I stayed there, slept there, enjoyed the Joneses, enjoyed the mountains. And after using it all those years, we're able to turn that profitable recreational site or that recreational vehicle into an appreciating investment. So all those years, they spent nothing and made a little bit of money. It was a very small amount, but it didn't cost them anything in all those years. And that's what we're talking about in this particular segment. The land that it also, that they located this mobile home on, they gave a very small amount of money then. And Rudy and I and you and Marge, we were talking several months ago about this property, and it's worth probably about 10 times just the land what they gave for it back then. Verification of what we're talking about, of the value. They have now put a double-wide mobile home. You and I were there vacationing about a year ago, and I suppose they spent somewhere in the neighborhood of around $45,000-$50,000. Well, they'll enjoy that, and we'll enjoy it, and other friends will enjoy it through the years. And somewhere down the road, if Rudy and Marge ever decide to sell that, they'll sell that and make another profit on it. It's just that simple. If you buy it right, it's already half sold when you get ready to sell it.